Good morning, everyone. Welcome to House Special Committee on Fisheries. It is 10:03. Time to come to order. It's Tuesday, March 2nd. Members present: Representative Vance, Representative Story, Representative Tarr, Representative Ortiz, Representative Christ-Tompkins, and Representative McCabe, and myself, Chair Stutes. This is just a friendly reminder to silence your cell phones. If members need to pass a note, please do so through my committee aide, Matt Greening. He'd be happy to help you. I'd like to thank Shannon McCain, our committee secretary, and excuse me, from the Juno LAO, and Alan Marasigan, a technical teleconferencing support. We have a quorum to conduct business. As a reminder, the recording secretaries are operating remotely, so please identify yourself for the record when you speak. We have two items on today's agenda: HB 79, Saltwater Sport Fishing Operators Guide by House Rules at the request of the governor. We previously heard public testimony on this bill, and we will hold committee discussion and consider amendments. We also have HB 80, Sport Fish Hatchery Facility Surcharge, by House Rules at the request of the governor. We will be having public testimony and setting the bill aside for further review and amendments on Thursday. Up first, we have House Bill 79, and here in person today is Doug Vincent Lang, our very own commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game. Commissioner, welcome. I understand you'd like to make an opening statement on HB 79. We're happy to have you here, and if you'd please come forward and state your affiliation and your name for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning. Before you start, could I take a brief of these? Thank you, Commissioner, for the indulgence. Now, if you would state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your comments.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Doug Vincent Lang, and I'm the Commissioner for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Thank you first for hearing HB 79. The history of this bill is kind of long. So it started out, we had a freshwater and saltwater guide licensing program that was instituted, I don't even know how many years ago, probably about 15, 12 years ago. And it was meant to, it was basically put together at the request of guides across the state of Alaska. At that time, they felt there was a need to set some standards for the industry. And we had, as a department, had some requirements under treaties and different acts, the Halibut Act, to collect data on saltwater fisheries. So there was a fresh and saltwater guide licensing program that was put in place by the legislature, and it set minimum standards for both industries in fresh and saltwater, and it instituted an ability for us to start collecting information in both fresh and saltwater. That bill had a sunset into it, and when it came up time for sunset, freshwater guides across the state of Alaska basically said, we're not interested in participating in this process any longer. And the reason was they had some valid concerns and some invalid concerns. Part of the reason was that they were increasingly getting, we were getting requests as to how we were using the information in freshwater versus saltwater. Saltwater guides understood, because they were operating on halibut and salmon across the state, that there were treaty obligations, and they understood that, and how we were managing their fisheries was closely tied to the collection of information. However, freshwater guides, except in a few fisheries, across the state weren't as convinced that we were using that information for in-season purposes. And we kind of agreed with them. There are many cases where the number of grayling that were caught and released just wasn't of interest to this department, and we certainly weren't using it for in-season management purposes. So when that bill came up, the other part was that as a result of those reporting requirements out in rural Alaska, many of those guys were operating on federal lands. Many guys were getting cited by federal agents, and for minor violations on the number of grayling released or some other minor violation of the logbook statute. And as a result, if you get too many citations at the federal level, you lose your concession on federal lands. So at the end of the day, the legislature chose to let the bill sunset, but they gave us money to deal with the bill. So it came back up, and all of a sudden we got the bill, I think, a second time, and we reinstituted saltwater guide licensing. Again, that had a sunset date on it, which went away about a year and a half ago. So now you have the bill in front of you to reinstitute the saltwater portion of this bill in order for us to meet our obligations for the Halibut Act and the Salmon Treaty, as well as management purposes in saltwater under state management. So right now we're not requesting, as part of the governor's bill, the freshwater piece of it, simply because we don't use that information for in-season purposes except in a few isolated cases. You know, we might be able to use that information in some of the freshwater fisheries on the Kenai Peninsula, for example, but we would do that on a case-by-case basis if we needed it in those areas. So that's the bill in front of you right now. We are right now funding the logbook program in saltwater with DJ dollars and Fish and Game Fund, but as most of you realize, we took a pretty big hit in license sales last year with the Fish and Game Fund on sport fish license sales. So our ability to dip into the Fish and Game Fund is a little bit harder this year going forward than it was in past years. And we've used more leverage of the DJ funds to basically ensure that we can backfill that loss in Fish and Game funds throughout the Division of Sport Fish by putting some of our managers on a 75-25% match. So with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions you may have regarding this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone, Representative McCabe?
Yes, Commissioner, I'm curious how much money exactly do you need for this program, and what's it going to go for, just printing logbooks or administration of logbooks, or is it going to fund the e-logbook system completely, or what exactly is the money going for?
The money goes to the licensing program that licenses the saltwater charter guides and outfitters and the books and the licensing requirements for the businesses and the operators out there. And then it also goes into the paper logbook program that we're moving into a electronic logbook. It's our goal to basically have that fishery on electronic logbook within the next 2 years.
Follow up, Representative.
Thank you, sorry.
McCabe.
So the, how much money exactly is?
I didn't bring that with me. I've a couple of lifelines on the line here, but the cost, the current licensing fee does not pay the entire cost of the logbook program.
The current
fees that are proposed in the legislation.
The ones proposed. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to remind committee members that there is a remote secretary recording this meeting, so remember to identify yourself before speaking. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This is Representative Tarr. And I wanted to understand a couple things about this just in terms of sort of your thinking. So sounds like one reason you're not wanting to include this sport fish folks is that you're not using it for in-season management. You know, that seems like a challenge under the best of scenarios, just because you're trying to take real-time data and process it and, you know, kind of use it. So it doesn't, in my mind, though, preclude that information from being helpful, like, for post-season sort of review, or, you know, is there not any usefulness, I guess, beyond the in-season management, I guess, is one thing I'd like to understand. And then just because we are having so many issues, you know, just take the Kenai River, for example, and having to have fishery closures, you know, with those guides, they are being licensed. is my understanding. And I want to understand a little bit better of just, you know, when we know there's such concerns with some of those fisheries, you know, why we wouldn't, you know, if we're getting all the information we need from them. So sort of those two questions, you know, we know there are situations that are not saltwater that where there are concerns. So, you know, are we by only doing licenses, getting the information we would need to address those concerns, and then thinking, you know, if part of the justification is that we're not using it for in-season management, is there no usefulness after the season for thinking about, you know, the next season, for example?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Tarr. So I don't want to put too much requirements on our fishermen who are trying to make a living if we're not using that information, especially for in-season purposes. You're certainly right. There is some post-season information that could be useful, knowing the number of guides that are operating in a fishery or knowing the number of businesses that are operating a fishery. But there are other ways that we can tackle that for many of these fisheries, especially these fisheries for non-salmon populations that Western Alaska, rainbow trout, for instance. And we can kind of get at that information, the number of businesses operating through other sources, through our federal partners, and knowing who's operating a concession in certain areas. With respect to the Kenai River, you know, right now there is still a requirement to license on the Kenai River in the state park area. That got taken over by state parks, that licensing piece for that for the businesses on the Kenai River. And when, in fact, we actually have fisheries on the Kenai River for king salmon, we actually conduct a creel survey to know what's actually being harvested. So we collect that information in another manner.
Thank you. Did you have a follow-up?
No, thank you.
Representative Christ. Oh, excuse me. Representative Ortiz.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, as a kind of a follow-up to Representative Tarr's question, in the process, what takes place out there in the freshwater world in terms of guiding and taking people to places to access the resources in freshwater, I assume that in many cases there are bag limits on the amount of fish that can be caught, at least in some situations. So what's the overview, what's the process that takes place in that situation to try to ensure in some way that those regulations are being followed and those bag limits are being followed? I understand that perhaps it's not the logbook, but what does take place so that people are being monitored and make sure that things are being done the right way?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the same way all fisheries in the state of Alaska, whether they're guided or unguided, are done. We have enforcement out in the field that randomly checks people out in the field. So there are many fisheries that occur out in rural Alaska, for instance, that are not guided fisheries, that are, you know, subsistence fisheries. They're just recreational fishermen that occur out there. They don't have any reporting requirements, so they're basically, you know, on some kind of a random check through enforcement to make sure bag limits are being adhered to.
Follow up.
And do you have any sense as
Representative Ortiz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ortiz, thank you. So do you have any sense as to with the understanding that the amount of people and the amount of resources that we have available to do that type of monitoring activity is limited and probably has been reduced over the years, do you have any sense as to how much we're not catching out there in terms of how much we're not really truly monitoring? I mean, it's just kind of like we're asking people to go on their honor system pretty much 90% of the time, 80% of the time. What can you tell me about that?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I like to think most people are relatively honest. And at the end of the day, you know, especially if a freshwater guide is breaking the law consistently, enforcement will probably go out and pay them a visit, and there's probably a good chance that they'll get caught. Probably additionally, though, there's a really good chance that if it's operating on federal lands, which two-thirds of Alaska is, they're going to lose their concession program on federal lands. So there is really very little incentive for them to break state laws on bag limits.
Last
follow-up, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it your testimony here today that the logbook process that takes place in the freshwater world doesn't in any way contribute to that overall sense of self-monitoring, self-regulation as to what's actually happening from a day-to-day basis out there in the freshwater?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I can't put my mind in the mindset of being a guide because I've never been one, but I would say that having gone on a couple different guided fishing tours in Western Alaska, at the end of the day, knowing the number of rainbow trout you caught and released, that has to be accurately reported in the logbook versus, you know, getting back, I could forget how many rainbow trout I caught in a day and released. And that guide now is responsible when he drops a client off to know at the end of the day, he's probably asked that client, how many rainbows did you catch? Well, it's up to that client to report back to what they thought they caught, but if an enforcement officer was watching a federal one, for instance, it might not be accurate. So whatever's written in a logbook is going to be held accountable for. On a charter boat, it's a whole different situation. You have control of the fish. You see the clients. You're basically, it's a lot easier to track that. So.
Thank you. Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, really appreciate you being here. This is helpful. I think this issue is of great interest to this committee and a lot of people. So, appreciate your making the time. A couple of questions. I mean, maybe just for the committee's benefit, because I feel a little rusty on this, and I think other members might have similar curiosity. Could you just explain what the Creel survey is, what that process looks like, what the data it collects, what its purpose is? Okay.
So a Creel survey is, through the chair, Representative Chris Thompson, What a Creel survey is we randomly go down to the docks on certain hours of the day and interview anglers and ask them what they caught, and then we make an expansion from that subsampling of the fish to come up with a total catch or harvest for a species. We also are able to, through a Creel survey, is actually put our hands on fish. So in Southeast Alaska, for instance, we're putting our hands on king salmon, and we can look for coated wire tags, and we know any hatchery production that we get out of that are caught by sport or commercial, or in this case, sport fishermen, guided sport fishermen, don't count against our treaty quota. So even if we have a logbook program, we still haven't be out on the docks to estimate the number of hatchery contributed fish to our catch. The other thing is that there's no freshwater reporting requirement right now, so we are, that's our other opportunity to get a handle on how many non-guided, trout or king salmon or halibut are caught. So the logbook gives us a better estimate for the guided portion of it, but it doesn't give us a good estimate for the non-guided.
Got it. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
If I could add one more thing. We are working on the non-guided piece through our new licensing program, which has a reporting option in there, and we're toying with making that as a reporting requirement, at least in Southeast Alaska, so we can get a better estimate in season of non-guided sport harvests of king salmon.
Follow-up?
Representative Christ Tompkins.
On that last comment, greatly of interest, I think, to the committee, and we received testimony from an operator here in Southeast Alaska highlighting the, I think, broad concern about the lack of data and reporting from the non-guided charter sector. Could you say a little bit more about what you just mentioned the department is starting to do and considering to do?
Yeah, so I just got briefed the other day on our electronic licensing program, and one of the pieces in there is that when you get there's a harvest reporting requirement for king salmon and Cook Inlet, there's a 5-fish annual limit. You can report on that license app what you caught, the date and time, and then that will automatically download to the department when they get back into cell phone range. So that'll give us another tool on the non-guided piece of this to be able to estimate harvest. But again, that's only the problem with all of these programs is they work within cell phone coverage. But the way we've set it up is you can log it at the time of harvest, and then when you get in cell phone range, it downloads in.
Thank you. So just to
Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you, Chair Stutes. So to make sure I've got this right, let me try to play that back to you. So the department for. So if I'm an unguided charter operator, I'm renting boats, people are going out, they're catching fish in Southeast Alaska, they're coming back. Who is entering the data electronically about how many people just caught I don't know how many halibut, how many king salmon just got caught by those unguided fishermen who are renting boats.
They're reporting through the statewide harvest survey, and then we actually will go sample those things on a periodic basis through our creel surveys on a random basis. So, bareboat charters are not covered underneath the current definition of sport fish operators and licensing.
Got follow-up?
Follow-up.
Okay.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. I'm trying to distinguish. So unguided charter operators, there actually isn't anything that's in place or in the works to try to get data on that sector.
Through the chair, Representative Chris Thompson, that's correct. But we've been discussing that with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council and the need to start collecting information on bareboat charters. And I think as a department, we're looking at whether or not we can start collecting information through a registration program and the number of these boats that are out there and the number of businesses that are operating as a first step. Because again, the council didn't want to step into regulating those things until we had a baseline as to how big the problem was or big the issue was.
Follow up.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. Chair Steeds. I followed those council discussions a little bit. What is your and the department's thinking about when such a registration program might be rolled out or what the next step might be and when?
Through the chair, Representative Chris Thompson. I haven't had time to tackle that with Rachel Baker. Maybe the we can get back to you in the next by Thursday, and I'll give you an update on that.
Thank you. Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So I'm curious how we arrived at the $400 going from zero to 400 for one small subset. I mean, we've heard a couple of different subsets of people that are actually catching halibut, say, and we are going to put the logbook reporting cost on one small subset with a huge $0 to $400 is a big nut for guides, I would think, especially after COVID. So how did we get to the $400?
That was what was determined to be the cost of that program when we put it in place under the first surcharge bill. So
follow up.
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, again. We're just going to make the guide shoulder it. Wasn't there a better way to do this? Couldn't we spread it out over all of the halibut anglers, the unguided ones as well, and some sort of a different program? Whether I think I heard that there was a tag possibly discussed, like a king tag. Isn't there a better way to do it than to just slam it onto the guides, which is a revenue-generating group in Alaska, and increase their costs?
Through the chair, Representative, there's two ways you could capture this revenue. You could capture it through making the guide themselves pay the fee, which they're going to pass on to their clients, or you basically make all Alaskans pay it, regardless of whether or not they're using it, our charter boat outfit. I think when the first bill was passed, it was realized the better approach would be to actually put the burden on the business, and if they needed to pass that cost on, they would pass the cost on, rather than have, for instance, a subsistence user of halibut in Hoonah have to pay that fee. I think that was the thought of the original legislation.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me figure out this microphone. I'd like to stay on the dollar figure here. We've heard a need for this current proposal in the bill is set to generate around $400,000. Is that correct?
I think that's correct, yes.
And I've heard of the actual cost being around $600,000. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, that's correct. That's my guess is that the best guess is what we're currently spending.
So where's the other $200,000 coming from?
Through the chair, we're basically collecting some money to do some of these programs through federal programs. So. but not enough to cover the 400,000 that's left.
So. Follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Vance.
I think that's one of the things that many of us are struggling with is exactly, you know, the what's needed, how it's going to be used, and how it's currently being funded now. I'm struggling with imposing a license and fee onto our businesses right now in light of the pandemic and the loss of tourism that has just sent a shockwave through our state. I think most of us agree with the idea that we need the logbook program. We want to continue to maintain this because we don't want the feds coming in. We're all pretty clear on that. But I would hope that we could find a way that doesn't impose a burden on businesses that are trying to stay afloat right now, even though it seems like a nominal fee at this point. But are there, I guess I'll get to my question. There are some sport guides that have to pay $1,100 to state parks. How many of those would overlap with this? Are there instances where there are going to be guides that will have to pay this saltwater licensing in addition to state parks, or is that just freshwater?
So through the chair, Representative Vance, I'm not aware of any saltwater state parks where there's a requirement to pay $1,100. I could check and get back to you on that, but I'm not aware of anybody in saltwater where that licensing requirement overlays. And then getting back to your first question is we're fully cognizant of trying to keep businesses afloat. I think that's probably why we didn't forward this bill with the entire $600,000 cost and raise the licensing fees to take the entire $600,000. Certainly during this time of COVID, you know, we are fully aware of the impact it's having. We've seen it in our own division with the loss of almost $6 million worth of license sales to the sport fish division. So. We're fully aware of the cost. So one of the things that's an option to you clearly is staggering the licensing fees in to give businesses a year to recover some of the costs. But those are considerations that you all can make around the table. But yeah, I understand. I don't want to do anything to fisheries was one of the bright spots in our economy last year. We got them in the water and we certainly don't want to do anything to harm them. But at the same time, we can harm them pretty harshly if we're not collecting the necessary data under our treaty and halibut obligations. That will shut them down pretty quickly.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to take one last question, then we're going to move on to amendments. Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Chairman Stutz. So I'm curious, and this is my ignorance speaking, the reporting requirements for halibut, are our guides the only ones that are going to shoulder this, and what's going to happen if the state doesn't do it? I mean, I understand there's, and this is from a constituent, there's a huge halibut bycatch that is either underreported or not reported all by, and not to get into the sport fish versus comp fish argument, right. But that is either underreported or not reported by commercial fishermen, and yet it seems we're going to hold our guides to a pretty high standard. Are they the only ones that are going to be held to this standard? How does that all play out?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe. So there's a couple questions in there. First off, the only people that are under an allocation right now for halibut is the charter boat fishermen. The council made that decision about, I think, 8 years ago. They chose not at that time to put the recreational non-charter boat fishery under a quota. They're still under a 2-fish daily limit and 4-fish bag limit. And we capture that through our creel survey programs. The second question is, yeah, there are halibut bycaught in the Gulf of Alaska and in the Bering Sea. There's all in all, there's pretty stringent reporting requirements, especially in our trawl industry for reporting the number of halibut. They actually have observers on board many of those programs, and now we're struggling with how to look at halibut bycatch for the smaller IFQ fleet, which is a smaller fleet, and we certainly, in many of those boats, we can't put an observer on just simply because it isn't cost effective, and so we have logbook reporting requirements for them on the number of halibut that are released that are undersized or just released overboard. So yeah, we are as part of the council priorities when I became commissioner, we set bycatch as in the observer program as a priority of ours, and we're tackling through that issue to get better observer numbers and I mean better discard numbers on halibut mortality in both the Gulf and Bering.
One small follow-up. Thank you.
Follow-up.
Representative McCabe again. So all of the bycatch and the creel halibut surveys and all of that goes into one logbook reporting system, or are they all three separate systems? What I'm struggling with is that the guide at $400 or the operator is going to pay for this entire system that everybody else is using. So it all has to be collated into one system somewhere so that we can keep track of the halibut, right? Yeah. So it just seems to me that we're putting the onus, if you will, for the payment of the system on one small subset.
So through the chair, Representative, so maybe last year is a good example. We used our logbook program to estimate the number of halibut that were caught in Southeast Alaska. We knew that tourism was down, but we didn't know what the harvest was. We were able to go back into our logbook program and say, hey, we are way under what the allocation of halibut to the charter boat fishery was. As a result of that, we took that information to the International Pacific Halibut Commission, and we got fishery restrictions lifted or relaxed on the Southeast Alaska charter boat fishery that allowed them greater opportunity to try to recoup some of that because we had in-season information. So that's a use of this logbook information. And that benefited that industry, especially in the fall, where they were able to attract clients that they probably wouldn't have been able to attract.
Thank you. With that, we have amendment number one before us on
this.
Thank
you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Ortiz, I would entertain a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number one.
And I will object for purposes of discussion. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The purpose of amendment number one, I think, is perhaps will address some of the concerns that have been raised here at this table today. In adopting amendment number one, it's to provide equity amongst guides and operators by removing the language requiring only saltwater guides or operators to sign up for a license, and instead ask that all guides and operators become licensed. By increasing the number of licenses, we can reduce the cost to license originally proposed in HB 79 by half to $100 for guide license and to $200 for operator license, and the $200 for a combined guide and operator license. This amendment also includes language that reporting is to be done by saltwater guides and operators only. So the logbook portion of it will continue to no longer need to be done by freshwater guides, but all guides would pay $200. And in doing so, we're going to be able to collect, through our calculations, the same amount of money that the original HB 79 would have collected, but reduce the fee from $400 down to $200 for saltwater guides, but then add that fee to all guides, including freshwater guides. That's the purpose of the amendment.
Is there any discussion on amendment number one? Representative Kreis-Tompkins.
Thank you. A question for the commissioner of the department. Approximately how many freshwater guides would be affected by this, i.e. what's the, for cutting 400 to 200 for saltwater guides, do we have a sense of how many freshwater guides there are that will now be chipping in 200?
Representatives, I have somebody on the line that could answer that question probably better than I am. I'm going to take a guess here that it's about somewhere on the order of 1,400 to 1,600, but Tom Talby is on the line that could answer that if you wish.
Mr. Talby, did you hear the question?
Madam Chair, Tom Talby, Division's Operations Manager. Yeah, the Commissioner is correct. It's about 1,400, maybe slightly less. When we've had both logbooks in place, the number of guides in saltwater versus freshwater was about a 50-50 split.
Follow-up, Representative Kreis-Tompkins.
Thank you. So in summary, this is basically a net revenue neutral amendment given the number of operators, both saltwater and freshwater.
Through the chair, Representative Kreis-Tompkins, without talking to my staff, I'm going to say it's probably not net neutral because we'll have to reinstate the licensing requirement for freshwater guides and operators and institute that program to get them licensed and get their boats, you know, decaled and other things. So there's some cost associated with that, but I don't know what that would is right now.
Okay.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative McCabe.
Not a question.
Comment?
Say, but Representative McCabe, through the chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm frustrated we're adding another level of bureaucracy that we don't need. I just see this as another program and another thing for the guides and sort of a stepping stone into more government. So I am wondering if there's not a better way to do this. Frankly, I just think that we have two bills in front of us that are the department saying that they need revenue. And to me, it just sounds like maybe we should combine them both and increase the second one a little bit. So I'm not in favor. I know we're discussing the amendment right now, and I'm not in favor of amending this bill. In fact, I'm in favor of tabling it in lieu of 80 and putting more money into 80 and let the department figure out how they want to spend it.
Thank you for that. I will just add a comment. In the conversations that we've had with the department, they are adamantly opposed to combining these two bills, and they feel like it would very possibly be the demise of both of them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is there further comments? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Is there further objections?
Yes.
Representative Vance. Can the clerk call the roll?
May I speak to my objection?
You may speak to your objection, Representative Vance.
Yes, I like the idea of spreading out among, I don't like the idea of putting a license requirement on one segment of sport guides and not the other, and this spreads that out, and I appreciate the intent behind this, but I'm not comfortable voting yes on this when we don't have a clear picture of how much it's going to cost the department to implement the program. We didn't have an answer on that regarding how much it's costing to implement the licensing with the saltwater guides, and now we've added freshwater, and feel that I don't have enough information to be able to vote yes on this particular amendment.
Thank you, Representative Vance. With that, I would ask for a roll call vote, please.
Representative Tarr?
Pass.
I'm sorry, Representative Tarr?
Pass. Pardon me.
Thank you. Representative Christ-Tompkins?
Yes.
Representative Story?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
No.
Representative McCabe?
No.
Chair Stutes?
Yes.
Representative Tarr?
Yes.
I have 5 yeses and 2 nays.
With that, Amendment 1 has been adopted. Up next is Amendment 2. Representative Christ-Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Amendment number 2.
And I will object for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you. This amendment adds an uncodified section of law asking the department to prepare a report, basically solving the problem that I think everybody recognizes, including per the commissioner's early testimony, that you know there's a deficit of visibility about what is happening in the unguided sector, and this asked the department to share with the legislature some ideas and thinking how to solve that problem. And I'll just say that we're limited on time, but I think all equal would be interested in a more a harder solution on this, whether it's a registration program or whatnot, but you know, maybe there'll be an opportunity for the next committee referral to consider that, and I'm very interested in talking with those members to see what might be done. But that's what this amendment does.
Do we have any discussion from this committee? Representative McCabe.
Did someone object for purposes of discussion? You did? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Representative McCabe. So this, once again, is exactly what I'm talking about from the last amendment. We have just added yet another amendment that adds more levels of government that is going to harm. It looks like to me that the Department of Fish and Game is going to have to get that information from somewhere, from the unguided sport fishing industry and in the charter boat rentals. So it just adds another level of unneeded bureaucracy, in my opinion. And I think that it, I'll be no on this one as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Representative Tarr. And I wonder if the commissioner would be able to answer a question on this one. My question is just, I cannot, you know, claim to have deep knowledge of this issue, but definitely we've been talking about it for the last couple of years. I'm convinced, you know, we need to understand it better to know the extent of the problem. So it's sort of like, you know, how do you define address the problem before you've defined it fully? So I think this is important work, but having worked with you just on this invasive species work, I know that the department is like, you know, very stretched thin capacity wise. And I'm just wondering what your reaction is to this directive, you know, that you shall prepare a report proposing these solutions. Is that the kind of thing you can do with the staffing you have now? You know, is it kind of the people exist with the knowledge, but they just need to type it up and put it in something that gets to us? Or are you envisioning this is like a research project where you have to, you know, find resources to accomplish it?
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, actually, I've been thinking a lot about this question, how to best, the saltwater piece, if you pass this bill, will have a good program in place, and we'll make that program electronic within the next year or two. So we'll have good information on the guided piece of it. The unguided piece is a challenge, you know, across Alaska, because a lot of that halibut, and especially the pieces where we have treaty and halibut requirements, occur off the docks of people's homes. And, you know, how do we tackle that? And we've been talking about it a lot. You know, we're looking now at our new licensing app as a way of having reporting requirements for not only these fisheries, but also many of our personal use fisheries, for instance, on the Kenai River, that you could report so we would have an accurate accountability of what's being taken off the beach. I think the deadline here is May 22nd. I guess I would just ask if you consider giving us a little bit more time than a year to resolve these, because these are complex issues. But I would have no trouble with tasking staff of looking at this issue and coming forward with recommendations.
Thank you. Representative Christ. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to support this particular amendment, and while I agree with Representative McCabe that, you know, nobody's desire to over-regulate or to put excessive regulations out there. But the fact of the matter is that the state of Alaska has a strong constitutional directive to effectively manage our fish resources to a maximum sustainable yield. And that takes people, and it takes regulation in order to do that. And while it would be nice if we didn't have to do that, the fact of the matter is, especially with our connections with the federal government and our treaty obligations, international treaty obligations in relationship to halibut and salmon, you have to put the resources in order to do the job. And that's just the reality. And this department has seen less and less resources go to it in order for them to carry out their constitutional mandate over the years. They're down at least 30% in state support for them to do the job that they're asked to do. And so yeah, it'd be nice. But the reality is we are directed by the Constitution to manage our resources, our fish resources, to the maximum sustainable yield. And that takes money and it takes regulation. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative McCabe and then Vance.
So thank you, Madam Chair. Speaking directly to your comments, Rep. Ortiz, I'm not suggesting that we don't give them the money. I'm just suggesting that the way that we are doing it, A, cuts into our the people that are at the front line of the resource, which is the guides, unjustly, and it could be further spread around the whole state if we needed to, and instead of one subset, small subset, of people who do provide income to the state shouldering the whole burden, we could spread it out to the larger group of the state and make it a smaller burden and effectively do the same thing without all the kerfuffle of this bill and that bill and every other thing. And so I'm not suggesting that we don't give them the money. I understand that they're down. I understand COVID and all that. I'm suggesting that the way we're doing it is adding to the level of bureaucracy that we don't need.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Vance.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a couple of questions for the Commissioner on Amendment Number 2. And obviously, everything that the department does has a cost associated with it because of personnel. And do you foresee that this amendment would take on another financial burden for the department?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, it's going to take some staff time to put this report together, but I think it's an important enough question that I'm willing to find staff time to deal with it because, you know, again, we have to answer questions on the unguided piece of the sport harvest, whether it's halibut or whether it's especially salmon treaty in Southeast Alaska. So we need to look at how we can improve those estimates because creel surveys are expensive. If there's an electronic way of doing that, we should be looking at it. So, yeah, there's going to be some cost, but I don't imagine it's going to be really significant. So.
Thank you. Thank follow you. Up.
Follow up, Representative Vance.
So if we were to, in lieu of the licensing requirements, if we were to institute a halibut tag that halibut fishermen who are fishing for halibut, whether they are guided or non-guided, were to purchase and report on their electronic fishing license, would that be a more effective mechanism to get this data and fund the logbook program, in your opinion?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, I know we've talked about it, but I haven't really given it any great deal of thought. I guess that would be one of the things we could consider in part of putting this harvest report together. But clearly, you know, the intent here is to get information from the guided portion of the fishery. Right now, we're not tackling the unguided portion of the fishery. So if you were to take that approach, that would miss the salmon piece of it. So I'd have to give that a little bit of thought. Sorry.
Follow up. This is Representative Vance. What I feel from the committee is that we want to help the department be able to collect the data to the best of your ability. And I'm really excited that we have an electronic licensing program now that it's so much easier. The fisherman doesn't have to pull out the soggy folded license out of their very wet pocket. That they always have it, but also that you can have that data easily on the fish that they're catching. And instead of having the department go and collect this data, it seems like whether it's salmon or halibut, that could be duly collected just with that license program. And so I think I would love to have ideas on what we can do in that regard that's already in place instead of...
Representative Vance, are you speaking to Amendment Number 2?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Because I'm just trying to get to the heart of what is being asked with Amendment Number 2 and find getting insight of solutions that we could have rather than just saying, here's another report, I think we're all looking for that same data piece and funding mechanism because it's so needed. But figuring out the best way to make that happen and just loving as much insight as you can give us for what you're doing and the way that we can help make that happen through legislation.
Thank you. Representative Chris Tompkins?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of the question on date, Commissioner, I might have misheard what you said, but the amendment lists May 1, 2022, so over a year from now. Does that feel like sufficient time?
If it's through the Chair, Representative Chris Thompson, I would ask that you extend that by 1 year. I think you get a more comprehensive report at that time. So we'll do either one.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Representative McCabe?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move to table this amendment until the commissioner can get us the monetary cost of what the amendment would cost. I heard him answer Representative Vance, and he said that he couldn't tell us right now what the cost of this particular amendment was. So I move to table this amendment at this time.
Let me take a brief at ease. Do you think somebody online? Come back to order. Commissioner, can you answer Representative McCabe's concerns at all?
Through the Chair, Representative McCabe, yeah, there would be some cost, but it's things that we need to be looking at as part of our business model that we're currently operating, and I don't expect that would be significant, and we would direct staff to do that.
Lift my motion.
Thank you.
Wrap up comments, if I may.
Representative Christ, could you have a question?
Just a quick comment, and it's your amendment, obviously. So, I do think thinking of that May 1st, even if it got pushed out to this at the end of that summer, you'd have that second season of information. Is that what you were thinking, Commissioner? Is just so you'd get two seasons of information?
Well, this through the Chair, Representative Tarr, I think what this is asking me to do is provide a report to the legislature as to how we see the future of reporting working out, and do we have any recommendations that we could bring to you? And it's asking us to look at how other states collect this information and how the province of British Columbia does, and we're currently doing that. I just worry that trying to put that report together by the end of by May 1st of next year might just be a little bit burdensome, but we'll get it done if we need to.
Okay, thank you. I wasn't sure if it was related to like field season thinking of data collection, and so I just wanted to ask that.
Through the Chair, one thing, you're not going to probably meet as a legislature until that following December, so giving us a little bit more time to get that information in front of you might be useful.
Thank you. Representative Chris Tompkins.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. If I may make a conceptual amendment to the amendment.
Certainly.
And my amendment number one to amendment number two would be to delete May 1 on line 16 and to insert December 1 on line 16.
And I will object for purposes of discussion. Is there any? I will remove my objection. Is there any objection to amendment number 1 to amendment number 2? Hearing none, amendment number 1 to amendment number 2 has passed. With that,
and may I make wrap-up comments on
you may make here. Wrap-up comments, Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you. Really appreciate the commissioner's thoughts. I know that Alaska's North Pacific Council team is already spending a lot of time thinking and working on this issue, and hopefully this just sort of makes the connection between the agency's thinking and the legislature, given that I think there's a broad majority of minds are interested in getting this data. To Representative McCabe's comments, given that I represent the part of the state that's probably most affected to this, I can say it is needed as far as my constituents are concerned, and I've heard a lot of feedback, especially from the charter sector, because they're reporting data and the unguided charter sector isn't, and it's sort of fair is fair. And as far as the role of government and all of this, I mean, by that thinking we should stop requiring commercial fishing vessels from submitting fish tickets because that's unneeded bureaucracy. But obviously we need that data to manage a common resource, and I think it only makes sense that all sectors should be required to submit data in some form or fashion, and this amendment would be a step towards the unguided charter sector contributing their fair share.
Thank you. And with that, I will remove my objection to amendment number 2. Are there other objections? Hearing none, amendment number 2 has passed unanimously. And with that, we are back to the original bill. And I would like to move this bill forward to its next committee. So may I have a motion, please?
Object.
We need the motion first.
Madam Chair, I move to report House Bill 79, version LS1323/A, from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Now I say object.
Nailed it.
Representative McCabe, would you like to speak to your objection?
At ease.
Brief at ease. Back to order, please.
Madam Chair, I'd like to remove my last motion and restate the motion, please.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you. This is Representative Tarr. I move to report House Bill 79, version GH1608/8A, from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Representative McCabe.
Object.
Would you like to speak to your objection?
I would, Madam Chairman. Thank you. I would like to offer a conceptual amendment, if I could. On page 5, line 17, I would like to change the word second to third.
Page 5, line. Do I hear any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Because
Representative Tarr.
This is Representative Tarr. Because we have a motion, I think I need to remove that motion if you want to offer a conceptual amendment, because it will bring the bill back before us for consideration. So I will remove my motion to move House Bill 79.
Thank you for that, Representative Tarr, and you're absolutely correct. Thank you. Is there any discussion on Representative McCabe's conceptual amendment?
Yeah, I just have the bill up. Could Representative McCabe, would you be able to restate the conceptual amendment?
Sure. On page 5, through the chair, sorry. On page 5, line 17, it says second or subsequent offense in a 3-year period guilty of a Class B misdemeanor. That seems like a pretty heavy lift to me, Class B misdemeanor. So I'd like to change that to third.
Object.
Would you like to speak to your objections, Representative Christ Tompkins?
There may well be, a good conversation to have here, but it seems well removed from the main thrust of this legislation. And I'm just sort of scrolling up. This is really just conforming language, this is conforming language that's being amended, so it's well removed from the subject of the bill. And I mean, unless we really have the opportunity to get, I don't know, wildlife troopers and others in here, I feel a little hesitant changing criminal statutes on the fly.
Other comments? Representative McCabe?
So while I understand that, what we are doing is we are adding a licensing or a reporting requirement into this statute, and it's a minor reporting requirement. We've heard testimony from the commissioner that there were federal officers that were stopping the regular sport fish guides, and for minor offenses, what he called an extra grayling or maybe not a catch and release that didn't work quite well or something like that. And it just seems to me, if we're going to put this requirement of a guiding license and reporting onto our guides that we need to relieve them from small mistakes to prevent the sort of excess or heavy-handed prosecution that we've heard the commissioner talk about.
And this is Representative Stutes, and I would tend to agree with you. I've heard from some of our guides, and it's it can be a simple mistake that creates a violation, and you get a couple of those, and you've just lost your livelihood. They take your license away from you. So I will support your amendment, Representative McCabe, because I think it's pertinent. Do we have other comments? Representative Tarr.
Madam Chair, I was just looking it up because I didn't remember off the top of my head. This is Representative Tarr. Class B misdemeanors in Alaska are punishable by up to 90 days in jail and a fine of up to $2,000. So that you know, I guess if it is something that's done innocently, it seems like a fairly hefty punishment. But the sort of the doing it on the fly here challenge that I have is the way this is written is for your first offense in a three-year period, you're guilty of a violation. And then the second or subsequent offenses in the three-year period, guilty of the Class B misdemeanor. So it feels like if you make that the third, the second violation is hanging out there and doesn't live anywhere. So then it seems like you have to either make the first and second offenses in a three-year period guilty of a violation. So then the third and then the subsequent offenses after. Because otherwise there's sort of like no penalty for your second offense. And that seems odd. But if that were the way that you wanted to do that, then I think I could support that. So it would, you know, conceptually, line one then on line 16 would be first and second offense in a three-year period, you'd be guilty of a violation. And then on line 17, then you could do third and subsequent offense.
Okay. Representative Christ-Tompkins?
I think this is a little crazy if we're going to be starting to change criminal law without having any experts from the troopers or anyone else. I mean, we should have another committee hearing if we're going to be. And there may well be a good amendment. I just really think that this is going to get unwound down the road, or we should just have a little more visibility about what we're about to do.
Okay. Representative McCabe?
So I don't disagree with that necessarily, but I still see this being, as the commissioner said, if you forget to dot an I or a T on a report that we are making mandatory in here, you could have a $2,000 fine in 90 days in jail, and I just think that's wrong. I think we're adding a report in here, and we're not changing the penalties for a minor mistake. So,
Representative McCabe, maybe this is something that could be addressed in resources where this bill goes next.
Certainly.
If you would withdraw your conceptual amendment, we can move this bill out and let it go to resources and address it in resources. Is that satisfactory with this committee? Okay. With that, Representative McCabe? Oh, it does not go to resources. It goes to finance. It could be addressed in finance. We have our finance member right here.
Okay. So
Representative Ortiz, could you...
Particularly if we could get some information from the wildlife troopers, et cetera, and how this change might affect how they choose to enforce things, that kind of thing, I'd be more than happy to move that forward.
Okay.
Is that satisfactory?
Withdraw my on-the-fly amendment.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. And now we are back to Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Representative Tarr. I move to report House Bill 79, version GH1608/A from committee as amended with individual recommendation and attached fiscal notes.
Object.
Representative Vance, would you like to speak to your objection?
Yes, and I do this in the friendliest way possible. I'm objecting because I feel like we are on the cusp of finding a really good solution to the funding and reporting mechanism for the logbook program. And I don't want to just pass on something because it's in front of us without us finding the better solution. And I feel like the heart of this committee is working towards that, and feel that I know regardless of the movement of this bill that we will continue to do that. but I cannot support it at this time.
Thank you. Other comments? With that, I would ask for a roll call vote, please.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Story?
Yes.
Representative Christ Tompkins?
Yes.
Representative Tarr?
Yes.
Representative McCabe?
No.
Representative Vance?
No.
Chair Stutes?
Yes.
We have 5 yeas, 2 nays.
And with 5 yeas and 2 nays, House Bill 79 will move from committee. Thank you. As amended. Thank you. And with that, we're just going to move ahead. And just, you can go ahead and sign that. But we're going to move ahead. Next, we have House Bill 80, Sport Fish Hatchery Facilities Surcharge by the House Rules. At the request of the governor, and we were not able to get in public testimony last time, so we will do that this time. However, our esteemed commissioner would like to make a brief statement on this bill, and we will go into public testimony before discussion. So, Commissioner, if you would state your name and affiliation for the record once again.
My name is Doug Vincent Lang. I'm the commissioner for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. So this bill goes back to how we funded the constructions of the Anchorage and Fairbanks hatcheries with a kind of a unique package across the nation. We actually attached a surcharge to sport fishing licenses to pay the bonds back that we took. No general funds were used to actually build these hatcheries in Anchorage and Fairbanks. And we actually were able to use the surcharge money to match Dingell Johnson money, federal money, and build and repay these bonds back to the hatcheries in much quicker than we had expected. When we did the bonding, we realized that Southeast Alaska anglers were paying surcharge fees, both non-guided both non-resident and resident anglers, but they weren't getting real benefits from the hatchery. So we decided right off the top that we would take $500,000 of the surcharge fees and support various PNP hatcheries throughout Southeast Alaska to produce Chinook and Coho salmon. And that we've been doing ever since that surcharge was in place. Fast forward to this past year, we paid off the bonds in advance of when we expected to do it. So that now is leaving us with a bit of a hole in terms of deferred maintenance on the existing hatcheries. And in addition to trying to fill the hole in Southeast Alaska, which has $500,000 hole for production of Chinook and Coho salmon. So we recognized, and it was a difficult choice, that we had made a commitment that when the bonds were paid off, we would get rid of the surcharge. And so, again, that left us in a hole, especially in Southeast Alaska, and with some ongoing maintenance for the two hatcheries. Realizing that we can't just close the hatcheries, we got to do maintenance, we thought of trying to continue some level of surcharge short of the full surcharge, which was being used to pay back the bonds, recognizing the bonds are paid back to allow us to do hatchery maintenance for the two facilities, realizing if we didn't have a surcharge, we're going to take it out anyways out of the Fish and Game Fund because we can't simply shutter them. And we wanted to look for a way to basically be able to continue the important enhancement projects in Southeast Alaska. So the bill in front of you is an attempt to reinstate a surcharge at a lower level to maintain hatchery-related activities throughout sport fish-related activities across the state of Alaska. And I encourage you to look closely at the bill, and the department supports it as well as the governor's office.
Thank you. And committee members, if you have immediate question for the commissioner, we can ask them now, but for the sake of those that waited online last time and have waited online this time, I'd like to go to public testimony if there's no imminent questions. So with that, seeing none, I will open up public testimony, and I'm going to ask testifiers if they could keep their testimony to 2 minutes. And first we have David Landis from Ketchikan.
Good morning to the chair and members of the committee. My name is David Landis, general manager of Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, or SARA, based in Ketchikan, operating 7 salmon hatcheries in the region. One of those facilities is Crystal Lake Hatchery in Petersburg. You heard the commissioner just refer to it. This is designated as a sport fish facility. It's owned by the state of Alaska. And for informational purposes, the state owns three sport fish hatcheries, one in Anchorage, one in Fairbanks, and then Crystal Lake in Petersburg. As the state's contracted operator of this hatchery, SARA supports the passage of HB 80. HB 80 would allow the department to continue funding the operation of this facility, and it would also allow the state to fund critically needed repairs that are currently putting millions of Chinook salmon reared at the facility in jeopardy. The department has characterized this project as a critical need. The failure of the raceways there is truly not if it's going to happen, but when. This is literally a shovel-ready project, fully designed, engineered, and ready to go. It just needs funding. If additional funding beyond the surcharge amount currently in the bill becomes available, our view is that this project and others like it could happen more quickly. Keeping Crystal Lake intact with both operational and maintenance funding is compelling. A recent department fact sheet shows Crystal Lake providing an impressive amount of Chinook in southeast Alaska. Our figures as well reflect that nearly 40 to 50% of Alaska hatchery king salmon harvested in southeast Alaska result from the Crystal Lake production. So to conclude, this is a user pay system. It's fair and appropriate, and we support passage of the bill, and this sentiment is echoed by numerous commercial and sport fishermen as well as individuals in the region. Thanks to the committee, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer or send information to the committee.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none. Next, we will go to, I see David Retz is here for testimony. Oh, questions? Okay. Then we will move down to Ben Moore from Kenai River Sports Association. If you'd state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Hi. Good morning, Chair Stutz and the Fisheries Committee. For the record, my name is Ben Moore. I'm the Executive Director of the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association, or KRSA. I'm testifying today to register KRSA's support for HB 80 as proposed by the Governor. I believe that by now this committee is familiar with the history of the sport fish license surcharge. That the surcharge, which fell off last year, did so because the bonds which were issued for sport fish hatcheries were repaid early. The hunting and fishing communities have acted for nearly 100 years to support the user pays model for fish and game conservation management, and this case is no different. The sport fishery, whether in freshwater or salt, directly benefits from Alaska's sport fish hatcheries. This is the central reason why we support the governor's bill, which introduces a surcharge on sport fishing licenses, the funds from which are specifically dedicated to supporting sport fishing activities. Our understanding is that these funds will specifically be used for operations and maintenance costs of the sport fish hatcheries across the state. And that, to us, is the critical portion of the bill, that the funds generated from sport fishing licenses stay with the users. Average Alaska fishermen will see a net $5 reduction in annual licenses between last year and next year while maintaining the services provided by the Department of Fish and Game. KRSA recognizes that it may be a challenge for some to see the decrease of license fees when Fish and Game has sustained such significant losses due to COVID. However, the previous surcharge wasn't used for operations necessarily. It was a bond repayment. The losses to ADF, the Department of Fish and Game's sport fish license sales in 2020 was primarily driven by a lack of participation by non-resident anglers, specifically due to their inability to travel to Alaska. So directing the surcharge to operations maintenance on sport fish hatcheries does provide some relief to ADF&G's budget, and the sport fishing community is happy to take it on ourselves. We thank you for considering this bill, and KRSA hopes it passes this committee and this body as submitted. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a question from Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Representative Tarr, and I'm just wondering, I think when we saw this bill last year, we amended it to just be a status quo situation, thinking we know there's great need, and that was prior to COVID. And I'm just wondering if you have thought about your position if we, were to consider that again this year. Does that change your support for the legislation?
Representative Tarr, through the chair, thanks for that question. It's something that really would come down to the details. You know, I think the sport fishing community in general is happy to see a decrease in our license fees, and we're supportive of whatever measures we can take to reduce hurdles for the average Alaskan to access the fishery. Mm-hmm. So the net $5 decrease between last year and next year is something that we're fully supportive of, but going back to the full surcharge is really dependent on details.
Thank you. And I just think of things we value, our salmon are way up there. And so that's why I just wonder if Alaskans, you know, knowing if it's going to something so important, would continue, you know, would just support the status quo situation. Like if I wasn't paying close attention, I might not know any better myself, and I would be happy that I was supporting our healthy fisheries. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Katie Harms from Juneau. Katie?
Yep, thank you, Madam Chair and members of House Fisheries. For the record, my name is Katie Harms, and I'm the Executive Director of Douglas Island Pink and Chum, or DIPAC, in Juneau. DIPAC is a private nonprofit corporation with the primary mission to sustain and enhance the valuable salmon resources of the state of Alaska for economic, social, and cultural benefits of all citizens. I'd like to take this time to register as DIPAC's support of House Bill 80. And provide a brief history of the Chinook Sport Fishing Program we operate through funds from ADF&G's Sport Fish Division that is currently almost 90% supported by the Sport Fishing Licensee Surcharge. Prior to 1994, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game produced Chinook salmon to enhance the Juneau area recreational fisheries. These fish were raised at the state's Snettisham Hatchery and released at selected sites in the Juneau area. In 1994, Snettisham was converted to a sockeye salmon production facility, and the Juneau Chinook program was transferred to DIPAC's Macaulay Salmon Hatchery. Since that time, DIPAC has received just over $340,000 for this sport fishing enhancement program each year. Without these outside funds, the Chinook program would have never gotten off the ground at DIPAC, yet it has become a staple program for the Juneau area anglers. During the past 2 years, Southeast Alaska has seen depressed salmon returns. And due to poor chum returns in 2019 and 2020, DIPAC came up well short of its operational and capital revenue needs from our cost recovery harvest programs. With no surcharge licensee revenues coming from ADF&G to DIPAC this year, the Chinook program will likely be greatly reduced. If no consistent funding source can be identified for the program into the future, there's a potential that the DIPAC board may be faced with the tough decision to eliminate the program altogether. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak today, and I would like to yield any remaining time for questions or to the user groups who greatly benefit from this program.
Thank you. Are there questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we have Al Barrett from Fairbanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Al Barrett. I reside in Fairbanks. I'm a sport fish user and a subsistence fisherman. I oppose this bill. As it's written, I was clearly, when we passed this thing several years ago, it was for the paying off of the two hatcheries in Fairbanks and Anchorage, and was well supportive of that because it directly affects sport fishermen. And I support continually the maintenance costs and operation of those two fish hatcheries that are dedicated to sport fishing. The Southeast hatcheries, just like other testifiers have said, is sport fishermen are subsidizing commercial cost recovery programs down in Southeast. And as a sport fisherman, I can't support something like that. And so I would amend, the two state hatcheries that are down in Southeast that are primarily set up for cost recovery and secondary to sport fishermen users. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none. We will go to Forrest Braden. Mr. Braden.
Thank you, Speaker Stutz, members of the committee. I'm Forrest Braden, speaking on behalf of Southeast Alaska Guides Organization today. We're a nonprofit association representing fishing lodge and charter businesses across the state's panhandle. These businesses make up roughly half of the marine charter fishing activity in the state. And HB 80 has our full support, and we do hope to see the enhancement surcharge quickly reestablished. Hatchery production at the state-operated hatchery facilities in Fairbanks and Anchorage, as well as production through private contracts here in Southeast, are critical in maintaining key sport fishing opportunities across the state and these programs need continued funding. We can speak best to the benefits of surcharge funds that have funneled to Southeast Alaska anglers, and our sport fishery is heavily dependent on fishing opportunity for kings and cohos, and to date, surcharge money directed to Southeast has gone largely towards Chinook hatchery production. Actually, a quarter of all king salmon harvest in Southeast, in the Southeast sport fishery, are fished from Southeast hatchery origin. And for inside waters, like around Juneau, Petersburg, and Ketchikan, that number goes up to half of all sport Chinook harvest consists of Southeast hatchery fish. Because of current wild stock closures on inside waters into late season, terminal harvest areas with hatchery returns are the only access many anglers have to king salmon all year. And when waters are open to wild stock harvest, hatchery fish available for harvest in common property fisheries help take pressure off those wild stocks while those stocks continue to rebuild. We'll note that a lot of the Southeast hatchery production benefiting sport anglers and common property fisheries is supported from landing taxes in the commercial fishery. So sport fishermen can and should contribute to the availability of target species in waters that they share with other user groups by paying an enhancement surcharge to fishing licenses. Hatchery production costs are rising, and there are continued needs to repair infrastructure, and we need to maintain fishing opportunities for sport, personal use, and commercial fisheries. Supported by current hatchery production and sport surcharge funds are key in making that happen. We'll add that we can support placing non-resident surcharge amounts back to original levels with the condition that any additional funds go toward increased production and fishery access and not activities unrelated to the intent of the bill. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. We ask you to move this bill forward and are open to any questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there questions? Representative Christ Tompkins.
Just a comment. I'd like to thank Forrest and Segoe for testifying both on this legislation and HB 79. That's appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Susan Doherty from Ketchikan.
Yes. Hello, my name is Susan Doherty. I'm the Executive Director of Southeast Alaska Salmon Association, known as SEAS. I reside in Ketchikan, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'd like to speak in favor of House Bill 80 and its intent to provide a source of revenue to ensure critical infrastructure and enhancement activities can be maintained and have a continued funding source. We would favor keeping the non-resident surcharge at its previous level to guarantee that the many projects you see in the fact sheet document provided by the department can be sufficiently funded. And contrary to a previous caller's testimony that the sports fish dollars support cost recovery activities, it is actually the opposite. Chum production and the cost recovery activities of those fish allows the association to continue to raise coho and chinook, which are not a valuable commercial fish, harvested fish, except for the trawlers. I would like to point out, when looking at projects and their locations, that the six sites in Southeast only depict projects where sport fish dollars are partnered with PNC Association dollars to achieve these release numbers. The commercial fishermen in Southeast, through their regional associations, pay for and operate the majority of the enhancement activities in this region, many of which are coho and chinook. In fact, over the 35-year period from 1985 to 2019, commercial fishermen, through their 3% enhancement tax, have provided more than $104 million through assessment alone. This is an average of $3 million every year for the last 36 years. There are many programs that the PMP associations operate to provide sports opportunities for coho and chinook harvest throughout the region that are solely paid for by the Fishermen Association. Some assurance that the share of the surcharge money comes to Southeast is an important piece of this legislation to consider. Again, we support the passage of this legislation, hopefully with some amendments to address ways to make it even better. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Are there questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Mike Kramer in Fairbanks.
Hi, thank you, Chair Stutes. This is Mike Kramer. I'm from Fairbanks. I'm the chair of the Fish and Game Advisory Committee, a fisheries subcommittee. and we discussed this HB 80 recently and opposed it. I opposed it personally as well. The surcharge was designed for a specific purpose, and that is to construct the hatcheries in Anchorage and Fairbanks that benefit sport users. A small portion of that, $517,000 a year, was directed to Crystal Lake. I encourage all the committee members to do somewhat of a deep dive into this to understand Crystal Lake's operations and its connection with the sport fish industry. It produces approximately 2 million king salmon smolt a year, and based on information from their website, about 20,000 of those fish were harvested in 2020, 17,525 of which were harvested in the commercial fishery, leaving a little under 2,500 available for cost recovery for the hatchery and for directed sport fishing. The surcharge, even if it's cut in half, would still raise tens of millions of dollars that we don't feel would be well spent by a private nonprofit hatchery run by a commercial fish industry. The commissioner has said that the department will support the rearing and release of all the hatchery kings produced by Crystal Lake in 21 and 22. We don't know where those funds are coming from, but there are apparently still funds available. We think that most of the state funds that are currently going into Crystal Lake are benefiting the commercial fishery, approximately 90 to 95%, and of while of some interest to sport opportunity in southeast in the southeast area, that is not their mission. They're releasing at remote sites that are primarily engaged in by commercial fishing, and the recent regulatory changes by the commissioner would expand cost recovery efforts in those terminal release areas that are remote and not accessed very often by sport fishers. We feel the surcharge was designed for a particular purpose, to build the two hatcheries in Fairbanks and Anchorage. That purpose has been accomplished, and it's time for the surcharge to go away, and the department should take a closer analysis of Crystal Lake's financial condition. They have borrowed, I believe, about $10 million from the state to fund ongoing operations.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to sum up your comments, if I could, please.
We need to be concerned about wild fish stocks and the impact that hatchery over-releases are having on our wild fish stocks and taxing sport fish anglers who primarily rely on these wild stocks to support a commercial fish enhancement program is inappropriate. Thank you.
Thank you. And we do have a question from Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Representative Tarr. Mr. Kramer, we had received your email with some of these same concerns and looked into it, but in looking into it, I guess it sounds like you have a lot of concerns about Crystal Lake, but I think that's just like sort of one piece of a much bigger effort here. And I think it sort of benefits both commercial and sport anglers, at least from the research that we were able to do. And I didn't get a chance to send you the document, but we do have a document from the department that shows, you know, the 270 release locations throughout the state. And so I had planned to email you back and send you this document just to help give a little better sense of how interior Alaska is benefiting from sport anglers in interior Alaska are benefiting from this program.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. And thank you for your testimony, Mr. Kramer. Next, we'll go to Ray DeBardablin in Kisilov.
Good morning, Madam Chair and House Fisheries Committee. Thanks for the time to talk today. Ray DeBardablin here. I live in Kisilov, Alaska. I'm speaking for myself, but currently I'm the president of Kenai River Professional Guide Association. I did speak with several of our board members and several of our regular members of our guide association, and we were in full support of House Bill 80. One thing that was asked about that is, I know there's hatcheries up in Fairbanks and Southeast and all that. We have a hatchery down here in Crooked Creek that could also use some help. I don't see that in the language. So that was brought up to my attention on why that wasn't, because we also have a king salmon concern on the Kenai River. It's pretty rare this last four or five seasons that we are able to harvest any Kenai kings that are greater than 34 inches. So I don't know why the Crooked Creek Hatchery isn't mentioned in that. And then I really liked McCabe's idea of the increase or combining 79 to 80. I know it's probably not that simple, but you increase the license fee by $4 for the hatchery program and $2 for the logbook program. That to me seems like a pretty simple solution, but probably not that simple. For that, thank you for your time to talk today, and thanks.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we will go to Ronnie Carmen in Kenai.
Hi, thank you very much. This is about House Bill 80. The House Bill 80, they keep mentioning common use, and I have to keep reminding lots of people that common use means it's so everyone can use it. So I'm afraid that even though we're talking about Southeast hatcheries, they mean all hatcheries. And we pay that 3%. And the 3% was paid by us commercial fishermen to enhance the sport fishery. But when it comes to common use on the Prince William Sound hatcheries, that's for commercial fishermen and for their livelihoods. It's not to be mixed with common use, as like the Kenai River is now common use. Everything is common use, so it means everybody has a right to the fish. And I have to remind you that the commercial fishery is paying that price. So if we're going to use common use, then I think the sport fishery should pay the 3% enhancement off of their fees, their tips, their licensing that, they're unregistered, so they don't make much on license. They really don't have a license fee. So this is all being paid and supported by the commercial fishery. And the lady just said so a few minutes ago. There's nothing being contributed by the sports fishery except for a little bit of a enhancement fee. I don't think they pay enhancement fee. Anyway, common use, I want to make sure that common use means that the commercial fishermen get their cost recovery and their expenses paid for their hatcheries first, and that common use shouldn't be a word that should be used in our hatcheries. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. And lastly, we will go to Lisa Von Bargen in Wrangell. Lisa?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Lisa Von Bargen, and I am the borough manager for the City and Borough of Wrangell, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I had to sign on late, so I apologize if what I say is slightly out of context with the things that have already been said. On the surface, House Bill 80 appears to be a vehicle only for sustaining sport fish enhancement. I understand that the committee realizes that's not the case. The funding generated under this program will support hatcheries like Crystal Lake in Petersburg, and although considered to be a sport fish hatchery, Crystal Lake also rears king salmon used to stock four commercial fisheries used by seine, troll, drift, and drift fishers in southern southeast region of Alaska. In 2020, the estimated ex-vessel value of those fisheries was $1.284 million. Over the past 5 years, the ex-vessel value was estimated at $7.341 million. The Anita Bay fishery is vital to the Wrangell fleet. Ex-vessel value in 2020 was approximately $640,000, and over the past 5 years, more than $4 million. In August of this year, Wrangell was the first community in Southeast to declare an economic disaster, one of the reasons being the collapse of the salmon fisheries. Without this enhancement funding, hatcheries like Crystal Lake will close, and those commercial fisheries will disappear. Wrangell and the entire region cannot sustain another economic blow, and I respectfully request that the committee approve this bill and move it out onto the next committee. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we appreciate your testimony. And with that, I have no further individuals for testimony, so I will close public testimony. And I would like to know if there are any questions from this committee regarding the bill for the department. A Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Stutz. Representative Story here. I have a question. When I look at the backup documentation, I see the objective is for maintenance and operations for some hatcheries, and down here in Southeast, it's projected for DIPEC to receive about 300 and Crystal Lake about 200. But I'm wondering, what assurances does the bill give in the language on page 1, section 1, line 10, that directly benefits or translates to a fee paid by an angler, say, in Region C, allocated for the hatchery stock release? I'm
Commissioner.
Through the chair, my name is Doug Vincent Lang, Commissioner of Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Representative Story. I give you, I guess, my assurance that even though it wasn't written in the original bill, we're giving $500,000 currently to Southeast Alaska, and we plan to continue that, recognizing the importance. I would note that Crystal Lake is a state-owned hatchery. It's unlike many other PNP hatcheries. That one is ours, and we're looking at ways to not only fund the continued operation out through $500,000, but I'm looking for some other potential funding sources through the Salmon Treaty to do some of the long-term deferred maintenance at that hatchery. But I guess there's no written assurance in the bill, but it's my intent to continue that production in Southeast Alaska, given how important it is to all users, and as knowing also that at the end of the day, any fish we produce that are hatchery fish are added on to our annual allocation of fish.
All of it.
Thank you.
So Representative Story.
Oh, thank you. This is Representative Story. So this has been, I know the surcharge lapsed, but this has been a longstanding practice to distribute the funds in this way. And why I ask is just if there was another commissioner, another authority, it would just be understood that this would continue this way, even though there's nothing clearly delineated.
Representative Stutz, through the chair. It's my intent to continue it, and I would note that ever since it's been going on, there's been about four or five commissioners, and they've basically followed through on that commitment to Southeast Alaska. And it's my intent, even though the surcharge would go down, that we would continue the $517,000 investment, even, and that would be a higher percentage of the overall surcharge fee than we paid in the past.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Representative McCabe.
Sorry.
No.
Through the chair, Commissioner, I'm wondering, so when we first started talking about this, admittedly my first fisheries committee meeting, hatcheries, Anchorage and Fairbanks, and now all of a sudden this Crystal Lake one is sort of in there, and maybe I missed it, but Crystal Lake feeds saltwater, right, as well as, I mean, both the interior Anchorage probably feeds a little saltwater, but the other ones are all sport fish in lakes, stocking lakes, right, for the most part?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, the William Jack Hernandez in Anchorage does saltwater and freshwater releases, and most of the releases that are out of the Fairbanks hatchery are all freshwater.
So, follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
What I'm curious is the is there any other contribution to the Crystal Lake hatchery other than the trollers and any of the sort of commercial fishermen in Southeast, or for that matter, the Cook Inlet guys that might benefit from the Anchorage hatchery, do they contribute at all, or is it solely on these surcharges that we're funding the hatchery repairs, so to speak?
Representative, through the chair. So all Alaskan anglers and non-residents are charged a surcharge. So if you're a sport fisherman in Anchorage or Fairbanks, you get the benefit of lake stocking, and you get the benefit of saltwater stocking if you're along the coast and in different areas where you stock fish from the Hernandez. And I think you got that information of where they're all stocked. In Southeast Alaska, about somewhere is on the order of a quarter of the fees are collected, but we don't really provide any fish from the Anchorage hatchery because it's just too costly to bring them down here. So our way of bringing them down to support the hatchery operations in Southeast Alaska is through our state-owned facility, which was run by a PNP, Crystal Lake, and a couple other facilities. We do that through two mechanisms. One is we've given them $517,000 in surcharge money, but we also, recognizing the importance of those hatcheries to sport fishing down here, we also have a fish and game fund and DJ match that goes in addition to that cost to support fish production down here.
Follow it.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative McCabe again. So maybe I could ask this a different way. Who else helps fund those hatcheries and the repairs on the hatcheries? Just the sport fishermen, or do the commercial fishermen help fund them? So Crystal Lake, obviously some of those fish are going to be caught by commercial fishermen. Same with Anchorage. So I'm wondering if we collect any money from the commercial fishermen. I'm well familiar, and I'm a fan of hatcheries, okay? I did Katoy Bay and Kodiak. I've hauled fish in the back of a beaver for a long time. So I'm a fan, don't get me wrong. But I think that if multiple groups are going to benefit from the fish, then multiple groups should be supporting both hatcheries.
Yeah, through the chair, I think I understand your question now. In Anchorage and Fairbanks, sport fishermen pay the entirety of the cost. In Crystal Lake and Southeast Alaska, there is contributions coming from the commercial industry as well as other federal sources associated with the Salmon Treaty that support those hatcheries in Southeast.
Perfect. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Representative Christ-Hopkins.
But we in Southeast Alaska would welcome 100% of the cost of that hatchery being supported by the surcharge.
Thank you. Any other questions from this committee? With that, we're going to set this bill aside for further review on Thursday. Amendments for House Bill 80 must be to my office by 12 p.m. tomorrow, but please check with my office as soon as possible, as we are considering rolling the changes into a committee substitute. At the next committee meeting at 11 a.m. on Thursday, the committee will hear House Bill 80 again, consider amendments, and look to the will of the committee. Please note that we will be having our subcommittee meeting at 10 o'clock, our usual time, so please be here for that, for our subcommittee meeting. If we have time, we will also be having the introductory hearing on HB 115, Aquatic Farming and Hatchery Site Leases, by Representative Story. And I would ask this committee, is there anything else to come before the committee? And seeing none, I will adjourn this committee at 11:45 a.m.